it's very nice meditating with you and being here and looking around. And my eye just caught a little bird in the trees outside that great window that we have here. And some of you might be happy to know that I can see there's smoke rising from the top of the house, so the fire is on again. I heard that there was quite a congregation around there. There's warm, ancient fireplaces we have. So this evening and tomorrow in the practice, I want to be kind of introducing a little bit more around the parami of virya, which we could translate as energy. But it can also mean effort and kind of the vigor, the way that we come to our experience. But I think energy is a helpful one because, you know, energy can be of various kinds. Energy kind of turns up in all kinds of places. You know, we have a sense of the energy in our body. But equally, we could speak about the kind of energy with which we bring attention. Yeah, there's energy all over the place. You know, we have everything in life is in some way, perhaps, an expression of energy. And what we might be interested in our meditation day to day is those moments where we have really low energy and also those moments where we have really high energy, and how we can meet that, how we can apply that energy through our efforts. Yeah. And always our energy is being applied through our efforts. And, you know, to kind of cover similar ground in different language, perhaps, you know, there are ways in which our efforts are being made dependent on kind of habitual patterns, tendencies that we tend to have. And maybe they're kind of relatively unconscious, where we're actually expending our energy, putting our effort, what we're creating in terms of our experience. And as Zohar was putting it, you know, what we pay attention to and how we pay attention to it, that makes our experience. And that's a way of kind of applying our energy, yeah, the energy of our attention. I'm putting my energy into this thing now. And it's really useful to be clear about where am I? You know, where am I putting my energy? What am I investing my energy into? And what are the kind of results that it's bringing back? Because on a broader sense, that's not just true of our moment-to-moment experience, you know, what I pay attention to, where I'm investing my energy, how I'm applying that energy, which could be applied in different ways, different hows of attention, the kindness or the aversion. Yeah. That only doesn't only make our experience collectively is our life. Our life is what we experience. How we experience, where we place our energy, shapes our life. Yeah. Describes our life. It's dependent on where we place our energy. Seen as, you know, kind of that significant. And so a skillful practice question can be, how is my energy right now? And where am I applying it? And hopefully within that question, it's not like, and I might be doing it wrong, and then I should, you know, mark myself down or criticize myself or realize that I'm hopeless. But actually, that means I could place it in other places. I could apply it in different ways. I could change my energy. And this hopefully isn't something that sounds really abstract. Yeah. That if you find yourself, you come to a meditation, you feel, oh, I've got really low energy. The conclusion that the teachings are saying to us isn't like, well, that's going to be a bummer. Low energy meditation for you. It's actually, is there a way that I can shift that and actually have higher energy or something? Yeah. Without rejecting that, but actually kind of transforming it, shaping it, developing it. Yeah. A low energy state can also be a wonderful meditation. And in fact, we might come to a meditation, suddenly we've got high energy. We say, oh, I didn't realize I could also do that. I've come to an energy, I've got too much energy. And now, well, that's a bummer. Now I'm going to have that really agitated, restless meditation, but it'll be over eventually. You know, you just have to accept these things. No, it's easy. Maybe there's things that you can do through the how and what you pay attention to kind of bring that high energy restlessness to a sense of aliveness, yeah, a sense of interest, a sense of curiosity, a sense of skillfulness. Yeah. So we want to be aware of the how and the where that our energy is flowing, right? Because that is our life. The point of the paramis, or one of the points of the paramis in general, is that they are there to kind of elevate us above our normal behaviors. You know, what we see as our normal limits, into these kind of sublime and far-reaching attitudes. Okay, so virya, energy, the reflections on energy and what we can do with that energy is meant to be far-reaching, wholesome quality. And why? Why? Because they cross us over the flood. Yeah. So I just want to spend 5 minutes, that's my plan, speaking a little bit about the flood. Yeah. So this is a metaphor. Some of you may or may not know, but the Buddha was actually not only, you know, a very accurate and helpful teacher that managed to kind of establish one of the world religions that we have up in the icons at the back there. One of those represents Buddhism among Christianity, Judaism, Islam, Hinduism, others. Yeah. So not only were they, you know, offering a teaching that felt valuable and important, significant enough to become a religion, they were also a poet. The Buddha was also quite an artist of the words. Yeah, there's quite a lot of word play and there's quite a lot of imagery in the text. So we have a flood. And so what that flood means, I'm not going to try and define. Yeah, it's going to be beyond that because it's a poem. Like, nobody gets to tell you, well, the poem means this. The flood is this, you know. But we can all have a little go and kind of point out some of the ways of what this flood might be representing. And if you have other things, you can, yeah, like, apply it there. But just as it's not very helpful to overly define a poetic image, it's not always that helpful just to say, well, it could mean anything. It's just really vague. And so it is also part of a teaching and it's supposed to represent something. But let's imagine that we have this retreat deeply rooted and sublime. Imagine you're a very deeply rooted tree, a large, majestic tree with big branches stretching up. And there's quite a strong flowing river. Maybe it's rained really heavily. The banks are really filled, or maybe it's even come over the banks, but you're a deeply rooted tree. Okay, you're not going to get pulled into that river in the same way as kind of the shallow rooted plants are. Yeah, they're going to get pulled in, the earth's going to move and things like that. You know, you're probably going to sustain yourself through that. Equally, the beings that are nesting in your large, majestic, sublime branches and the beings that can stay up in that kind of level, they're not going to get pulled into the stream. But maybe the land dwelling, the low living animals are also going to get pulled into this flood. Yeah. So there's some sense that when we're deeply rooted, when we're connected to the sublime, we're not so easily pulled into this flood. Yeah. And perhaps there's a sense that there's a way of being in our life that we're tuning into. It actually gives us that feeling of when we've been meeting our experience with more kindness and care today. Yeah. One way of describing how that feels when it's there, and it doesn't have to be there all the time, but some glimmers of that is that, deeply rooted. Or we've elevated the heart mind into something more sublime. Yeah. To whatever degree, if it's shifted and it's only like glimmers of moments that we did that, we're able to touch into that. That still says it's possible, and it's possible for all of us at times. Okay, but still, what's this flood? What does it mean? What's it representing there? So have you noticed when you encourage the heart mind into a moment of silence, into a period of stillness, into this kind of settling of attention, we're going to, you know, whatever Zaha said that we would do today, you know, so breathe longer and deeper. So, oh yeah, breathing longer and deeper, that's going, okay. And then all of a sudden, we're like, oh, I was off, you know, thinking about this or that. Yeah. Now, we never said, so I didn't say, do that for a little bit and then go and have a think about your shopping list or this person that you're disappointed with, or, you know, where you want to go on holiday next year. You know, why you should keep doing these retreats. Oh, this is really good. I should come back. You know, oh, well, yeah, I think I heard that there was one in December. So, yeah. So the mind goes off to places. Yeah. So what we could say is, unintentionally, there are these currents of thoughts and ideas that kind of catch us, right? That does happen to you as well, right? It's not just me. Yeah, you kind of set the intention to do something, and it's a more subtle and quiet activity than we're used to. And then suddenly, we're off and we're pulled somewhere. It's not a problem. It's not a problem. It's natural that that happens. But those currents, if they're unchecked, if we really believe in those stories, we say, yeah, then we do that, and then we'll be happy. Yeah, we should do that. You know, if I get rid of that person, then I can be happy. I can be peaceful. Oh, it'd be brilliant. It's like, as long as you don't follow those things, yeah, we're okay. We're not quite in the flood. But you could imagine if you just believed that, you believed everything you thought, all of these instinctual ideas, all these relatively limited ideas, yeah, it's going to lead us deeper into that flood. And those moments where we can say, ooh, that was quite a trip, and come back to the breath, come back to nourishing kindness, come back to enveloping our hearts, minds, awareness, attention into care, then we're not going into the flood. Yeah. Does that make sense? And so the flood here is stressful urges and activities, things that stir us up, things that cause reactivity in the world, things that cause inequality, greediness, aversion, hatred, war, you know, disasters, all of those types of things through the way that we humans can act. Yeah. And when we're in the flood, yeah, when we're caught in those thought streams and those attitudes and those unhelpful, unbeneficial ways, we feel less resourced in ourselves. And when we step out of that flood and we support ourselves to become deeply rooted and sublime, however much we're able to do, we are more resourced and less likely to get pulled by those currents and more able to say, no, I'm not going down there. I've definitely been down there before. I'm not going down there now. Yeah. So it becomes circular. Yeah. If we're pulled into those activities, we feel less resourced. It's less easy to get free. And in the Dharma, our freedom is something we can contribute towards. Yeah. It's not something we can control, it's not something we can fix, but it's something that we can move in the direction of. And those kind of positive circles start to come about. And so what we've been practicing today is contributing to that. And we could actually just stay on, keep on contributing to that through the kindness, through the care. And a more free being is someone who we would expect and would see would act with more care. And acting with more care, they would find their way to further freedom. Yeah, so it's circular also in that sense. So it has this negative circle. You know, you feel less resourced, you act in unskillful ways, you're filled with regret, you don't know what to do, you act more unskillfully, you don't feel the resources of time and skill developing there. You act with more kindness and care, you become more sensitive, more able to check in with what's happening, taking life less personally, all of that, allowing more care to come through. And that allows us to feel more deeply rooted, more sublime. We can continue on in those ways. Yeah. And we can bring that care into the inquiry of how my energy is, and what we can do about that, so that we can get free on a kind of another aspect or dimension of experience. So being able to ask the question, how is my energy? Not as a judgment, you know, not as like, am I doing it? Am I in? Am I out? But really, like, how is it it's part of getting to know our experience, another dimension of this GOM becoming familiar. And I just want to name something that I don't think we mentioned quite yet, but we may have, so apologies if I'm repeating myself, but I think it's an important point. There's a big difference, you know, between being aware of obsessive thinking and being aware of obsessive thinking than not being aware of obsessive thinking and it still being there. Yeah. So like we're really, just keep thinking, and I don't even realize it. Then there's this moment where I become aware of my obsessive thinking. And then the temptation then is to leap into the flood and say, what a terrible mind I've got. I've just got this mind that won't stop thinking, you know, whatever it is. Yeah. Or I can remember this dialogue between a student and a teacher that was this public exploration. And this student was saying, I'm so confused. And the teacher says to him, are you sure? He said, yeah, completely confused. He said, you're really sure about being confused? He said, absolutely sure. He said, okay, so you're also really sure you're really not confused about being confused. You have great clarity about the level of confusion that you have. And there was a sense that in that moment, that sense of clarity about the confusion was the beginning of kind of building some kind of raft, some way of not being in that flood, but actually recognizing our experiences. In a sense that this person became rooted enough to have a footing back on the bank, you know, back into the possibility of, okay, so what are my choices? How can I respond? Yeah. How can we enact the care, the kindness, the non-harming, the mindfulness that can lead into an investigation, yeah, so that we can question rather than react? Which is very similar to that kind of door that opens when we decide to say, it's like this right now, rather than, oh no, I'm not having the experience that I wanted. Yeah, that Naroda owes me my money back because this wasn't what they advertised. They didn't say, come to this lovely place and have obsessive thoughts. Yeah. But as Zohar said, there's always something that we can do. It's always something that we can do to take the edge off the experience. And, you know, it may take quite a few attempts, quite a few experiments to really find what that thing is. There's always something we can do. And we could also add, there's always something we can undo. Yeah? Something we can undo. And that might be what's really appealing. So something we want to become familiar with is, you know, that virya, the energy of this moment, is an aspect of our life. And it's something that we can get to know. It's impacting our life in this moment. And it's also one of the levers of freedom, like one of the dials that we can move that starts to shift our experience. And because of that, using that awareness, getting to know our energy is a really important part. Yeah? So right now, you have an energy level. Right now, you're bringing a certain energy through how you're living your life, how you're paying your attention. So there's this kind of question, how am I showing up right now? How am I showing up right now? Have I got enough energy to be able to inquire in that way? And also to get to know where I'm putting that effort, where I'm investing that effort. What am I investing in? Yeah, we were remembering recently a retreat we went to very early on, and it was in the mountains. And on the first night, so I was remembering that we were doing the managing, the cooking, and we hadn't fed, made enough food. People became very hungry. They kept eating more and more and more food. And I can remember one night the teacher said, what are you feeding? When you go up for more food, are you feeding something that wants to get stronger? Yeah. Because what we practice is what we get good at. And it was just this kind of element of the experience. I think they just were a little bit worried we were going to run out of food before the end of the retreat. But there was another part that was really just bringing that kind of question. What are you investing your energy in? Because is that something you want to get returns from? Now, if we invest our energy into, you know, criticizing ourselves or criticizing others or bringing a greedy attitude into our lives, is that something we want to get stronger at? So it's really important to ask that. And another way of asking it is this leading into the flood or is this leading to freedom? Yeah. And the freedom is that sense that it's neither generating future stress, right? Because we will have to, you know, sleep in the bed that we're making here, have to stay in this body that we're winding up into this, you know, agitated state. Right? So we're not generating stress for future moments, nor are we actually thrown ourselves into stressful situations. Yeah, we actually can feel that. So getting to know our energy is really important, but I just want to speak a little bit about effort, the effort levels and what we bring. I think it's really important to know that the question of effort is kind of an ongoing dialogue with our experience. Like there will be times where we want to make less effort. Yeah, there are times, and there will have been times today, probably for all of us, where we made too much effort. Yeah, unbelievable. But we actually tried too hard for something. And it would have perhaps been more skillful with hindsight if we said, if I'd actually just rested back a little bit more. And there will be times today for all of us where we should have made more effort. Yeah. And we didn't. We go, it'll be all right. And it probably was all right, but it could have been more if we'd made a bit more effort. So how are we going to know if that's this moment or that moment? Yeah. But firstly, we do want to resist the temptation that there is like the perfect speed to go or the perfect amount of effort to make. Yeah. As if there's like, it's zero effort or 10 on the effort and we just set it on 5 and we just go through the retreat. And at the end, we're just, kept it on 5. I put blue tack on it, super glue, sellotape, stuck it on 5. It's always 5. What you need is 5. Just go, go, go. Yeah. Rob Bebert, who's a really great teacher and a good influence, someone really to listen to, used to say, keep your finger on the dial of your effort. Aware that it can be too little or too much. Something to keep an alive sense of. And I heard this Tibetan teaching that was saying, really just checking in if there's too much or too little effort in any moment, just as a practice question. Yeah. This sense that we can over effort or we can under effort in any moment. And we probably are. It's probably a little bit more refinement that could come there. And what that means is there is this middle way, but it's not the middle dial. Yeah. So like a wise amount of effort might be, you know, way, way, way down to 3 or whatever. And the right amount of effort in a future moment might be right up 8, 9, you know, really in there with it so that we can find our way out of the flood or resist the temptation to get pulled into it. And so that's going to depend upon, you know, how much effort we're already making. It's going to depend upon how much, how well that's going with that much effort. Going into it might be like, I'm putting a lot of effort in, but it's really flowing. It's really opening. And I can feel it in the body, heart, mind. I can feel that things are opening. The heart is sensitive. The mind is bright and sharp. I'll keep going with that amount of effort, whatever it is, high or low. Yeah. It can also really matter how resourced we are. Yeah. Many of us come on retreat only to discover we are exhausted, really exhausted. It's like, oh dear. So I really hope that you're also going to get enough sleep if that's what you've come with. Yeah. Or the body's sick. You know, it's like take care of yourself. That's what we're talking about. Taking care, bringing care to the experience. And of course, it's also our effort level is going to depend on what we're trying to do, where we're trying to go. Yeah. And we'll come back to that point as well. But this Tibetan teaching was really talking about the energy in attention. And what they said was, in any moment, including this moment, is our attention might be too tight and it might be too loose to be able to hold this experience fully. Yeah. So here's a good experience that we're having now. This might be the sound of rain falling. And to be able to listen to rain falling, you could be too tight and miss it. And you could be too loose and miss it. How loose can it be? And I find for myself, I'm more of a tight person habitually. Yeah, I get quite tight, quite intense. So I can really loosen quite a lot. Some people are very, very loose. Yeah. And they might need to just sharpen it up a little bit. And the way I speak about this is, with the loose types, I think the solution for it, the resolution for it, is kind of a sense of opening and softening. And when we feel that we're too loose, I think of it like tuning in. Don't know if you ever had to manually tune a radio. I know that they mostly come with presets and auto find and things like this now, and maybe people don't even listen to the radio. But there used to be a time where you had to turn a dial to tune a radio. I mean, I was tuning a radio only a couple of weeks ago. It wasn't even mine. And unfortunately, I put it out of tune. It was really, really hard to find the station again. I was in quite a rural area and I had to poke the area around. It took me a long time to be able to find it. But it feels like that. It's like you're just searching and you're just gone past it, come back. And it's like tuning into the sound of the rain, or maybe we're tuning into some very subtle quality in the being. Now, what does kindness really feel like? That tuning into that. Coming back over, just moving that dial as we kind of find our way into that quality. So it's too tight, too loose. They're speaking about attention, but they could also be speaking about our bodies. Yeah. It could be speaking about attention, the sense of awareness, those types of things. Too loose, or too tight. And are we then willing to play? Essential ingredient, the playfulness with our energy. So I'm offering that because I find that a very, very helpful question. That in any moment, I might be too loose and too tight. Yeah, so if I come back from a moment of distraction or I'm deepening into an experience, I just want to check, what does this need? And sometimes if you don't know, try one and try the other. Yeah. You can experiment. You've got time. You don't have to get it right. And perhaps it's more interesting to learn the skills and train the intuition by making mistakes, because we have the time now. And this isn't just a meditation skill, this can also be a life skill, you know, a transferable skill. It's like, does this moment where I'm engaging with this person or this project, am I going to get too tight or too loose? Such a helpful life question. It might be worth just spending a little bit of time speaking about that thing that we mentioned earlier, that we can come into a meditation and feel overly energized or under energized. Yeah. So has anyone, since we began the retreat, had a moment of feeling really kind of dull, sleepy, falling asleep? Anyone? Yeah. Most people have had an experience like that. Yeah. I've had experiences like that. anyone had an experience where they were too restless, too much energy, just felt like, I want to get out of here, too much stuff going on. Yeah, yeah, plenty of people had that experience as well. Yeah. And some of us have had both. And they may have even overlapped a little bit. Felt incredibly dull, and I wanted to get out of here. Turns out you can have too much and too little energy in the same body, heart, mind at the same time. Yeah. That whole sense of being over-energized, that restless, stirred up, unsteady. We just can't meet our experience with the skill and the art that it requires. Yeah. Or we're under-energized. We're kind of dull, sluggish, half asleep, or even more than half asleep. You know, some of us, I'm sure, have been completely asleep in here. Yeah. Oh, gosh. And then again, we can't meet our experience with the skill and the art it requires. Right, so why does that matter? Because that puts us at risk of falling into the flood. Yeah. So it's really important to do something about these states. Yeah. So this is work that we can do in connection with the body, and also the physical body, but also the energetics of the body. Now, there's a whole way of speaking about this, particularly I know that the Thai forest tradition within insight meditation, Buddhism, Theravada Buddhism, has spent a lot of time focusing in on an energetic body, right? Apart from the muscles and the bones and the skeletals and all of that, so speaking about that, which also, you know, yoga and Tai Chi and Qigong and these kinds of things, those aren't actually practices of working the muscles, are they? You probably know this, yeah, but like, it's the chi in the Qigong that they're interested in. Yeah, it's not like, oh, I can finally lift and move. It's like, you're not really literally moving air from one place to another. It's a feeling of opening up chi and things like this, yeah. These are not official chi concepts. I couldn't teach you stuff. Yeah, same thing in the yoga. It's not that, like, whatever, the downward dog is a great hamstring stretch. It might be, right? But it's actually there meant to be kind of opening, releasing prana, energy forces. So it's also possible to do this in connection with the body, then also connection with the energy body. We'll speak a bit about that. But again, you know, there's just this sense, can we take the temperature? Can we ask the question, is there a lot of energy now? Or is there very little energy now? So I don't even use terms for myself like restlessness and dullness. I just use the question of, like, is there a lot of energy or is there not a lot of energy right now? Because that speaks to me of a language of, like, well, we could change that, couldn't we? We could bring in more energy. Yeah. I know, because I can do it to myself and I've done it to others, I can wind things up. Yeah. I can get things agitated, excited, and going on. Yeah. And I can calm things down. Yeah. I've had insomnia. I know that there are possibilities to soothe, to calm, to open, to release, at least a little bit, right? And if it's possible to do things a little bit, I trust in the fact that someone is probably an expert, a master, a magician, a magister of some kind of degree. They can do whatever they want with their energy. I know it. I'm sure that's true. Yeah. I also find it helpful to step outside of the language of restlessness and dullness, because it describes the situation better, or what we might call the problem. And the better that we can describe the problem, I think the clearer we become towards finding ways out or solutions, so to say. Yeah. So the situation of restlessness is too much energy for this amount of space. Yeah, it's too much energy for this amount of space. Now, we could say, so just turn the energy down and then the space will be fine. Tricky thing to do. But how much space there is actually something we can change. Because the space is just a kind of concept in the moment, right? Typically, I would say, quite a large amount of the time, you will find me walking around my head. I'm a head that's just walking itself around. My body walks the head up there and then my head comes back here and I kind of... I'm in here where all the sense doors are. What a ridiculous idea. My awareness can easily fill the whole of the body. And if that's a sense, there's too much energy in my head, it's like, come into the whole of the body. And then again, if I can change that, then maybe actually my awareness is filling this whole room. Yeah, which it is. Oh, gosh, it is. I'm not in the head, I'm in the whole room. And maybe, you know, we each are having a Dharma talk in your awareness. Yeah. And here we are in here, and there's enough energy and there's enough space for all of that to happen. Yeah. So it's interesting that we can change that amount of space. And when you change that amount of space and there's still a sense of a lot of energy, there can also be a sense that that lot of energy is unfolding in a larger space. And that can be as resolving of that state as what we thought, maybe, you know, going for a run or, you know, shaking and whatever else we normally do when we have too much energy. Yeah. So staying with that one, staying with like too much energy, it can also be helpful in those moments to really rest down, to ground down, to exhale. It's not that the exhale naturally is more releasing and relaxing and everything, but that's how we tend to feel it. So when we pay attention to the breath, you don't have to pay attention to the whole of the breath. You don't actually have to pay attention to any of the breath, but you're choosing to pay attention to the breath. So pay attention to the parts of the breath that are soothing, releasing, grounding, resolving of the high energy. And if you find out-breaths relaxing, just attend to the out-breaths. In-breaths take care of themselves. We're now just with the out-breath. Sense of surrendering more, grounding down more. Yeah. Alternatively, if we feel that there's not enough energy and we want to bring more energy into life, then we can do that, I think, particularly with this idea of tuning in to the experience. And that kind of gathers in the energy, brings it in, and we can lift up the energy that way. I think a typical thing that's happening for a lot of us when we're having the dullness experience, falling half asleep, is that the messages are getting mixed up, right? That the body is basically dressed up for going to sleep. It's wrapped up in a blanket. It's nice and cozy. It's being kind of quiet. The eyes have closed down. And then the mind simply says, ah, I recognize what we're doing. It's bedtime, right? It's like shutting down all systems. It's like, I don't know why I always fall asleep. You're too damn comfy. Yeah. And so it can be really helpful to take off a few layers, let a bit of the cold in, and that can bring that sense of brightness into the psyche. If it's really helpful and it's that kind of situation, you know, standing up is a lot more helpful for that kind of state, particularly if the low energy seems to be just happening during the meditations. Right, generally, I'm walking around, I'm feeling fine, I come in here and I fall asleep. Yeah, so I'm standing up, having the eyes open, bringing more brightness in can be really helpful. But the next bit I want to speak about is actually the conception of things, how we conceive of things, the ideas that we can bring in are actually even more powerful than the shifts in the posture. Yeah. And this is where ideas like seeing the breath as maybe brighter than we would normally see it. Yeah. So have you ever seen a breath? Have you been paying attention to breaths for probably a couple of days? Anyone ever seen one? Ever seen one? Seen that kind of cold breath on the, you know, the warm breath from the cold day? But I really mean like intrapsychically, you're having your eyes closed and you're attending to the breath sensations. The truth is, there's a certain degree of that is completely imagined. A certain degree is completely imagined. That's a bit of a strange sentence. Some degree of that is imagined. Yeah. And so we're imagining this breath. And this is where imagining it as a breath energy also can come in. But equally, a sense of imagining that breath coming in and sensing it awakening the cells of the body. Or, as I was just beginning to say, imagine that breath coming in and actually brightening, almost like it comes in and it turns the lights on inside. So you're really free to kind of play with that. I would still keep with a sense of the rhythm of the breathing. But there's kind of a sense of as it breathes through, it's bringing energy to the cells of the body, which may be true, but it's not because it's true that we're doing these things. We're actually just exploring ideas, how those help to open things. So the breath energy is part of how we feel this body when our eyes are closed. Kind of feel an aliveness in the body. And what this forest tradition, Thai forest tradition of Buddhism are saying is that it's there within, if you hold your arm out like that, like how you feel that your arm is there, they say that's the breath energy. So what nowadays is called proprioception, the sense of body in space, is you're actually just feeling breath energy. And you can feel that, tune into that in ways that kind of awaken beyond the physical anatomical sense. Yeah. And so for some of us, when we're feeling sleepy, we can raise the arms. And in that style, we would be raising breath energy. For us, we're just raising our arms. Yeah. But it can bring a sense of brightness and aliveness as you raise that up. So feel free to adopt different postures at times to kind of raise it up. So what we're doing in meditation, in a way, is we're moving, shifting, opening energies. And so the indications of restlessness and dullness, as they're typically called, are just indications that the energy has gotten stuck in certain ways, or got spun up in certain ways. And we just want to find an invitation through that parami of virya to bring in a different way of meeting it. Yeah. So I'm not going to go through all of the different things that we can do with the energy, because I just want to spend a few minutes just speaking about effort towards the end. In the Dharma path, there is an element called wise effort, sometimes called right effort, but probably wise effort makes a little bit more sense. And this is the effort that we make to give rise and to sustain wholesome and beautiful qualities, like the paramis. Yeah. So the wise effort is the effort that we make to bring into being the kindness, the care, like we were doing today, the skillfulness with our energy, like we've just been talking about here, right? And that's what's considered wise effort. Yeah. Wise effort is also, in fact, some of you might have, does anyone have the lotus of kusala? Does anyone have kusala? We've got kusala in the house? Yes, great. So that is the wholesome, the beautiful, the beneficial qualities of the heart and mind. Every Pali word, well, not everyone, but like a lot of them, have an opposite. And so just as we would say unwholesome and wholesome, or beneficial and non-beneficial, we can say akusala also. Yeah. And these are the qualities of the heart and mind that lead us into the flood. The greediness, the hatred, the harmfulness, yeah, and those types of things. So when we see that, we actually bring the parami of letting go, of renunciation, nakama. Yeah, and we decide, I'm not going into the flood today. Yeah, not going in. And we can psychically replace, you know, greed with generosity, hatred with metta, and these things. But equally, what we can notice is that they have an energy to them. When you find yourself coming back into the present moment, and you've just been having a really greedy thought, you know, it's, oh, when is lunch going to be? Is it going to be as good as it was today, yesterday, whenever? You know, I find there's this leaning forwards as if I'm trying to get there sooner. Yeah. And that energy can also be regulated. So, I can actually just soothe down, rest into this. And that thing that I'm desiring for, I can actually find the satisfaction that I might be seeking in there through actually having an enjoyable breath in this moment. For that tasty lunch is only going to be as good as the appreciation and the enjoyment which I bring to it. And I can bring that same appreciation and enjoyment to this breath. Seems absurd as a sentence to say. It almost feels absurd to say it, but I'm completely convinced that the enjoyment of the meal is in the appreciation. Yeah. And if I can appreciate this moment, then I can have that satisfaction that I'm telling myself will only come if I get the circumstances the way I want. And so with that possibility, through adjusting the virya, through adjusting our effort and energy, we can gift to ourselves a lot of the satisfaction that we seek through material things. That's what these teachings are suggesting for us. And that supports us to be the kind of kind and caring being that maybe we find is what we want to be in the world. Yeah. So what we've been speaking about through this virya angle are actually four of the five hindrances. The hindrances that obscure our experience, and they're also part of the flood. The attitudes of greediness, accumulation, get more stuff for myself, yeah, or my tribe, or whoever it is, yeah. Or the aversion, the warring, the fighting, to get rid of this stuff, get it out of my life. You know, I don't want to have this end of the spectrum of experience. And the energetic realms of restlessness is one of the hindrances. Dullness is another of the hindrances that obscure, that cloud, that don't connect us to the sense of freedom in the moment. Yeah. And just as with the five precepts, which end with, you know, not clouding the mind, the five hindrances end with this sense of doubt, what it's often called, which is in a way a lack of confidence to come to our experience. A lack of confidence that will grow as we practice shifting, changing the energy of this moment, shifting, changing the way that the paths unfold, yeah, that the currents resolve towards the flood or towards the freedom. There's always something we can do or undo in any moment, somewhat, to some degree. And when it comes to these hindrances, the teaching says we should. We really should. Yeah. If you find yourself having, you know, self-centered, greedy, obsessive thinking, do something about it. Yeah. It's not good for you. It's not good for others. It's not good for the world. Do something about it. Bring in a sense of gratitude, generosity, whatever you like, if you can. Yeah. Just as a short aside as we're closing, but also if you find yourself kind of planning to get something and you say, oh, I've done all the research and I've got this wonderful thing, and all you need to do is just give it away. You've done the research. It sounds like a great thing. Who would you want to give it to? Or just turn that energy of the greed into something beautiful, beneficial. Yeah. Or we just renounce it. We let go of it. And we find ourselves, you know, obsessing around this idea that someone or something is the biggest problem that life has ever known. Maybe we can find something or some way or someone or something that we can offer kindness to in this moment. And that'd be much more beneficial, yeah, thing to practice, to bring our energy to. But equally, we could bring it down to this question. How's my energy? And where am I investing it? And I think that we'll find that that's a huge question for our lives. And another of those ways that we can bring ourselves towards more well-being, towards more freedom, and towards the kind of life that we want to see in the world. So let's rest our energies for a quiet moment at the end here. Thank you for your presence. And we can take half an hour for some walking practice, movement practice together, and then come back for the last stillness practice in here.